What the hell was that?
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yeah. Are you there?
We gotta get rid of this kook. I got an idea.
Greatness at its finest.
Welcome to the Rodcast.
Wonder who that could be.
On the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260.
Come on, why you want to play a brother like that?
And hornfm.com.
Is there a problem back there?
Where the Longhorns play and Austin talks sports.
You can always hit us up via Twitter at Rod Babers. For myself, my man Ray is at Ray from the 361. You also have the Specs text line that you can reach us at as well, 512-337-3776. We got a ton of things to get into on the show. As a matter of fact, we'll talk about the AFC South and why it is, I would say, out of all of the divisions in football, it's experiencing the most change over the offseason. We'll get into that, why that may be a good or a bad thing for the Texans. There is news for the Cowboys. If they are going to franchise DeMarcus Lawrence, it's looking like he is not opposed to that, which usually players, they are insulted by the franchise tag, which I never get, never understand why they're insulted by being paid like one of the top five highest paid players at their position. But oftentimes when they don't get the long-term deal, they get insulted by it. DeMarcus Lawrence's camp, I think, have made it clear that they would take the franchise tag and they would be happy with it. But that franchise tag puts him at around $17 million per year in that one-year rental, which is a very expensive franchise tag. And I've been told that if they're going to sign him to a deal, that DeMarcus Lawrence also wants around $17.5 million per. So either way, it's going to cost them around $17 million. If they can get him to a long-term deal, they'll try to sign him. If not, they have until March 16th to get the deal done. If they franchise them before then, they actually franchise them, then that will take effect after March 16th. But they have until then, even with the franchise tag applied, to get him in some type of long-term contract situation. And Stephen Jones has said he's going to be a Cowboy. So at the worst-case scenario, they will have him franchised, which I don't think is a bad thing. They've been looking for a war daddy for a while. Maybe it's ironic that the last great pass rusher they had was also a DeMarcus. It was a DeMarcus Lawrence.
Which isn't it?
How do you get two DeMarcus again?
Exactly. It's not like it's a common name.
Yeah, how many DeMarcuses do you know?
I don't know any.
Well, you
I know DeMarcus Ware and I know DeMarcus Lawrence. Yeah, that's it.
Man. Yeah, I'm serious about that. I just thought about that. DeMarcus and DeMarcus. We were just talking about how there are no Denzels the other day. Not a lot of Denzels. You would think maybe in like 10 years we'll know it's a lot of Denzels. But
maybe. I
like the name Denzel.
When did Training Day come out? Because I feel like that's when guys would be like, yo, I got to name my kid after Denzel.
He won an Oscar for that. So, yeah, maybe that's the one. But I was like, that's a really nice name. And yet, out of all the, kind of black names, you never hear Denzel. Maybe it'd be a white Denzel out there. That would be cool. All right. A white Denzel? Would a white Denzel be as cool as a black Denzel?
No, I don't know, man. I don't know.
Are there white DeMarcuses? Are there white DeMarcus?
I don't think so.
There's some names that are just going to be, yeah.
Yeah, I don't really know too many white guys that have, like, a prefix in front of, like, a name.
That's going to be great one day. I'm telling you, we're going to start seeing more white guys named, like, Denzel and DeMarcus. It will be a melting pot. All right, random conversation. We'll get to the Cowboys and DeMarcus Lawrence. We'll get to that conversation, too, when we talk Cowboys and talk Texans. All right, let's not waste any time. Let's get into all the headlines you need to know, you should know, in today's rundown.
These are the top headlines of the day. It's time for the rundown.
All right, the rundown, as always, brought to you by our good friends at Top Gun Lawn and Equipment Rentals. TopGun.net is where you find out more about Top Gun Lawn and Equipment Rentals. That's with two N's, by the way, TopGun.net. Biggest story in the country right now is the college basketball scandal and the details that have recently come out from the court documents from the Department of Justice and the FBI investigation into ASM, a sports agency, and several of their agents who are paying players, what they call loans to players under the table, trying to basically persuade those players to either sign with themselves or certain shoe companies or maybe even certain schools, assisting coaches. There is a web and a network of corruption involved in that scandal. But there are a lot of blue blood basketball programs, as many as 20 total basketball programs that have been detailed as being involved in the, or affected, I should say, in the college basketball scandal by the payment to certain players, even the University of Texas. And Eric Davis and Prince Ibe were two players, Longhorns, mentioned in those court documents. As a result, Chris Del Conte issued this statement. Brian Davis of the Austin American Statesman put it out there. Quote, I was recently made aware of this morning's report regarding our men's basketball program. Coach Smart and I have talked, and we're gathering facts, and we'll address the situation when we have more information. So, yeah, at this point, you know, we don't know exactly how involved and how intricate it was as to how much the schools may have been involved. The level of their involvement is just their players who took payments were declared ineligible basically then. If that's the level of their involvement, I don't see it being a situation where these teams are going to have to pay a heavy penalty, the actual programs. But we'll see. I mean, right now there is a lot left to play out. As many as 25 players were mentioned in it in these court documents. And like I said, there's like 20 schools were mentioned and 25 players were mentioned. So there's still a lot that could come out about it. But Texas, yes, directly affected. Kansas is another pro. Michigan State, North Carolina, Duke, Kentucky, also other schools that were named in the court documents. All right, so we'll get back to that because I think that's the biggest story out there, kind of exposing the black market of college basketball. And, like, I don't think anybody was ignorant to there being some underbelly to college basketball, but now that underbelly being exposed to the light, I think it's a big story. The other story here, and it's coming from the NBA, and Adam Silver, who has been really, really quick to make sure that he is on the right side of controversial issues. He has done it again. This time he is launching a confidential hotline for NBA workers, or NBA employees, I should say, to report workplace issues, including sexual harassment, also domestic abuse. He issued a memo to all 30 teams detailing this new confidential hotline that will be available, so that if there is a situation like what happened with the Mavs, where the head of human resources is dismissing complaints and is basically intimidating people who are trying to step forward, then you can bypass that, you know, that system of corruption, and you can report it straight to the NBA office. And you would think this is something that probably every company out there should have, considering the recent revelations, but I'm glad that Adam Silver's doing something. I'm sure he's also going to be investigating the Mavs and the SI article, the SI expose that exposed a culture of harassment, abuse, and sexual misconduct there with the Mavs over I don't know, almost a decade. And when he's like right now still gathering information, this is a really smart move by the NBA, very progressive move. All right, we'll get back to that, too, because I want to talk some more NBA. We'll get into some NBA news, notes, and nuggets. But let's get into the Winter Olympics. And the biggest story in the Winter Olympics this weekend may end up being the USA men's curling team, which has a chance to win gold this weekend. I think Saturday they're going to go up against Sweden in the gold medal curling match. And this is actually a story, and I don't know if it's as funny as the Jamaican bobsled team, but American curling was considered a joke last Winter Olympics. I think they actually did finish last in curling. Like it was not good. Like they were not a good curling team, and now they're kind of a feel good story. They got some characters on there. Curling in itself is considered a weird kind of eccentric sport. And Team USA got a chance to get another gold. Right now, Team USA has 8 goals. 21 total medals, 8 gold medals, and that puts them in fourth place in the medal count. They are ahead of the Netherlands, also with 8 gold medals and 18 total medals. They are behind Germany in third, 13 gold medals for Germany and 26 total medals. Canada is in second in total medal count in the Winter Olympics, 10 gold medals, 27 total medals. And Norway, the Norwegians, man, they some bad mofos, 37 total medals, dominating the Winter Olympics with 13 gold medals as well.
I'm looking at a picture right now of the men's curling team.
You see that guy? Andy Reid
is on there.
Yes. It's a guy that looks just like Andy Reid on that curling team.
Who would have thought in the offseason Andy Reid's a curler?
Yeah, he's become like this famous, like now like a meme, and people love like talking about him. And I mean, he must be really good. I mean, I have no idea. I don't know what makes you good at curling. Curling's one of those sports. If you can do it and still smoke a menthol, I don't know if I consider it a sport. You know what I mean? Like, if you can do it and smoke a menthol, I don't know if it's a sport. I mean, I'm going to challenge it. But you play golf and smoke, so golf is considered a sport. So don't hit me up on the Specs text line with that one. I just thought of it randomly. Okay. Since we're talking about the NBA making moves, the NBA is back in action now after the All-Star break, officially done and wrapped up. And tonight, the Houston Rockets, best record in the NBA, by the way, and the leading MVP candidate. We haven't talked a lot about MVP this year. James Harden is like a runaway MVP candidate from what I've seen and what I've looked at in the reports. Like, there's nobody really close to him.
Yeah, everybody's saying, like, it's more of him losing it at this point rather than him winning.
Exactly right. Basically, it's a done deal. Like, yeah. It's not like last year where we were going back and forth, Russell Westbrook, triple-double, and all that. No, it's done. It's wrapped up. Like you said, he's got to lose it, which would be amazing. Think about that. The city of Houston would have back-to-back MVPs in major pro sports, which is rare. Jose Altuve, MVP and for the Astros, and then James Harden, MVP for the Rockets. All we need is Deshaun.
Yeah, I was just about to say
Deshaun,
that, man.
Deshaun Watson.
It's totally possible.
It's never, ever happened. I actually need to research because I'm a nerd. I want to say that it's never, ever happened in the history of sports. Now, within like a calendar year, maybe even go 2 years. Go calendar 2 years that the three major pro sports, don't put hockey in there because then you may get me, all right? But the three major pro sports in America, the NFL, Major League Baseball, and the NBA, that a major pro sports city, and that means they got to have all three, have won the MVP in each of those sports in back-to-back-to-back or two-year period or year period. I don't think it's ever happened.
I don't think so, man.
There's no way.
We could definitely check it out. But, I mean, the only cities I could see where something like that happens is, like, maybe New York.
Boston, I guess, could be in that cat. You go deep on it, maybe Boston. I think it's happened a lot, like, back-to-back. It happens all the time, actually. You'd be surprised how many times the MVP in American League or National League also has the MVP in the NBA or in the NFL. It actually has happened, I want to say, like, maybe it's like 30-something times so far.
But to get the trifecta. That hasn't happened.
It's actually been impossible. I did the research. I'll pull out that research. I'm sure I got it somewhere in my papers here. I'll pull that out too, and we'll talk about that because that's really, really interesting. Anyway, in the NBA, Houston will be hosting Minnesota. San Antonio and all the drama that San Antonio brings, they are going to be on the road at Denver. Dallas is at the Lakers tonight. Man, a lot of drama in Texas and for NBA teams in the state of Texas. San Antonio's got their Kawhi Leonard drama. Dallas Mavs got so much drama, serious drama. The Rockets, no drama. They're just the best team in the NBA. You know what I mean? And so there you go. It's a lot of reasons to talk about teams, and all of them good, the teams in the state of Texas, or at least all around the country. All right. The hockey news we got for you, the Dallas Stars beat the Kings last night 2-0, and Texas baseball starts their series versus LSU tonight. Texas baseball team, they are 3-1 right now, I believe. 3-1. And they're actually supposed to be really good.
Yeah.
Texas baseball team.
Yeah, people are really excited about this team this year.
People are projecting them to be really, really good. We haven't talked enough about them, but we will once basketball season wraps up. And also, Marcus Peters, I want to say that news broke too, that Marcus Peters was traded to the L.A. Rams, which the Rams are, they're loading up, man. That's going to be a really, really good team for about 3 or 4 years. They got time to make a run. One of the best D-lines in the league, and obviously one of the best offenses in the league. Went from the worst offense in the league to the best offense in the league in back-to-back years. All right, That is the rundown brought to you by good friends at Top Gun Lawn and Equipment Rentals. TopGun.net with two N's is where you find out more about Top Gun Lawn and Equipment Rentals. Props, though, to Adam Silver for responding swiftly to the Sports Illustrated article about the Dallas Mavs. Remember, this is a guy that had a baptism by fire. He comes into the league as the new commissioner of the NBA, and the first damn thing that happens is Donald Sterling. The Donald Sterling thing, the most amicable and the nicest racist that I have heard in a long, long time. Never dropped the slur, never dropped the N-bomb. He just didn't really care for Magic Johnson or black people. And because of the audio tapes that are leaked out, Adam Silver has to address that and in unprecedented fashion decides we gotta vote this guy out of the league. He cannot be an owner anymore. And then he had a track record, but that was the final straw. But for a rookie commissioner, that was a hell of a baptism by fire. And ever since then, Adam Silver has proven himself worthy of the job. And even when he has to deal with situations like that that are extremely difficult and tough to navigate. So once again, this Mark Cuban thing, because it has to do with an owner, now he's not directly involved that we know of. You know, Adam Silver's going to be really delicate about how he handles it. Why? Because he's still got to do business with all these owners. The owners are his boss, essentially. Now, he can run the league, and he makes his suggestions, and just like, you know, Dictator Goodell, he's got a lot of power. But in the end, you know, we've seen Dictator Goodell go head up with a lot of owners based on the way he's handled some very controversial situations. And it's made him a politician. Adam Silver doesn't really want to be that. He's all about the players, pretty much, and you know, he's all about the brand and the image of the league, especially he wants it to be a progressive league. And the story about the Dallas Mavs and the culture there, that is not the progressive image. And especially, it's ironic in a bad way, almost Shakespearean irony, that one of the most progressive owners in all of sports is, you know, at the center of the scandal when, you know, the league is trying to be progressive. And that's why Mark Cuban and the NBA, although they have butted heads, have always been, you know, like-minded in a lot of ways because they are very progressive. Now he's dealing with this situation with the Mavs organization that has, you know, has them really mired in misogynistic, sexist, old-school, you know, culture and behavior. So I do applaud Adam Silver. I think it's a really, really cool thing that he's doing with that, with the hotline that you can call for, you know, for assistance or to report anything confidentially. And, you know, you can bypass any culture that may exist with that individual team. But I wonder what Mark Cuban's going to do. He's already taken responsibility for the Earl Sneed situation where he fired the beat reporter Earl Sneed that was arrested at the Mavs facility for one domestic violence incident. And then dated a co-worker in a separate incident and had charges of domestic violence filed against them separately. They actually had they put a stipulation in his contract after that he couldn't be alone with women in the workplace. I mean, if you had to go through all of that, you would think, oh, man, maybe we should part ways with this guy. Mark Cuban admitted, I wanted to try to get him help, and that's why he kept him on the staff. So he took responsibility for that. The Terdama Ussery situation, the president who in 1998, there was an investigation into him, and that was before Mark Cuban got there, but there was still, it was out there. It wasn't like, you know, it was something that was being hidden or something that they were trying to cover up. It was out there that he was already being investigated for, you know, sexual harassment claims. And then when he left the Mavs, hell, Under Armour hired him. It took Under Armour 2 months to find out he was a creep and that he was, you know, harassing women. He's a serial sexual harasser. And then they parted ways with him. Took him 2 months. And yet with the Mavs, for some reason he was able to persist with his activities there. So it's weird. We don't know how much Mark Cuban knew at this point, but I think the NBA is going to try to figure it out. I really do. But it's just more proof, and I've always said this, and it's a controversial statement, but I was saying this before the Me Too movement, but I feel it's true. America is as sexist as it is racist, if not more sexist than it is racist. I think America is more sexist than it is racist, and we are We racist.
I mean, who got the right to vote first? Women or African Americans?
Black men. And
so
they thought black men were substandard. They weren't even human. We were considered livestock and animals. And they gave black men the right to vote before they gave the right to vote to women. I mean, so I truly do feel like that. And I think that a lot of these stories in the Dallas Mavs scandal also, I think it really points to that. I even saw a USA Today survey. It said 843 women in show business they interviewed and surveyed, including like producers and directors and writers and actors. And it said 94% of them said that they were have been sexually harassed. Like, it's kind of, I think it's widespread in a lot of industries. And I think sometimes they're misunderstanding. Sometimes it's just a bad culture. And sometimes there are, you know, situations where these allegations, you know, that they, maybe not all of them are actually exactly as, you know, alleged. Maybe it didn't always go that way. There are two sides to every story. But I think it's pretty obvious that there's a culture going on in this country where women have been oppressed and don't feel like they can speak up. And that's in a lot of different industries. And it may be more NBA franchise and organizations that have to deal with people coming forward, especially now since they do have an avenue that they can, you know, that they can come out confidentially and they can do it off anonymously. You may get more stories about organizations like that. So I think that's what Adam Silver's trying to encourage, and I think it's a really good move. All right, let's get into the Cowboys news real quick, and then we'll talk some Texans as well. Okay, so the latest in the Cowboys news is interesting because DeMarcus Lawrence. Man, messing up my DeMarcuses. DeMarcus Lawrence, his agent has thrown the figure out there, or at least the figure that's been thrown out there from his camp, is that he wants $17 million, which is also, coincidentally, the number that he would get if he's franchise tag. It would be $17 million per year, I believe, is the franchise tag number. And he's already stated that he's cool with that. Like, he's actually okay with being franchise tagged and being paid like a top five guy at his position. Never understood why guys don't like the franchise tag. Some guys complain about it. He's not complaining about it. He's saying that's something he wants to do. Stephen Jones said that they would franchise tag him if they can't get a deal done. So what's probably going to happen is they're going to franchise tag him because they have until, I believe it is March 16th, to sign him to a long-term deal. But they only have until maybe it is maybe it's like the next 3 or 4 days to make sure they get the franchise tag on them. And then once they get the franchise tag on them, they can still sign them to a long-term deal.
I'm so glad that they're actually able to make this happen, because without him, the defensive line for the Cowboys was almost bare, especially the beginning of the season when they had so many injuries and guys suspended and things like that. It was really just DeMarcus Lawrence. And I also think it's smart to franchise him, because last year was his breakout season. So let's franchise him, see if he does it again. And if he's able to keep the consistency going, you know, sign him long-term after that.
Yeah, I mixed up my dates. March 6th is the time they have to tag him. July 16th is what they have to sign him to a long-term deal. So they got July 16th to sign him to a long-term deal. March 6th is the date to tag him by. But $17 million is the number that's been thrown out there. And I agree with all the Cowboys fans, and probably Stephen Jones too. Just rent him for 1 year and see if he can replicate the results. If he can replicate it, come close to it. If he can get to double-digit sacks again, then you sign him to a long-term deal. He might have been a one-hit wonder. Who knows? Hard to get 14 and a half sacks in the NFL, though. He's been trending in that direction in spite of the injuries. He had the back surgery. Also had a suspension. He was out for 4 games because of suspensions. But he's a war daddy. He's homegrown. You drafted him. You moved up to get him. He's working out for you. Yeah, just franchise him and try to. And if you can sign him, great. But if not, let him work that year in the franchise tag. And you'll get the best of him because he's trying to showcase, because he wants a long-term deal. So, and I think David Irving, I think with him and David Irving on the line, you got two potential war daddies. That's what you want. But players usually don't like the franchise tag. He's taking his agent is David Cantor, same agent of Olivier Vernon, who signed a 5-year, $85 million deal, $52 million guaranteed, 17 per. So they got the same agent. DeMarcus Lawrence had a better season than Olivier Vernon had before he became a free agent. before he was franchised by the Dolphins, they rescinded the franchise tag, allowed him to hit the free agent market. He only had 7.5 sacks that year. DeMarcus Ware. DeMarcus Lawrence. Keep mixing up my DeMarcuses now. DeMarcus Lawrence, he actually has 14.5 sacks, so he's double the amount of sacks he had. So he would be, you would argue, twice as valuable he should be on the open market. And Olivier Vernon signed a hell of a deal, and he got the same agent negotiating his deal that is DeMarcus Lawrence's agent. So that's the number. And he has a $17 million per deal. That's why they keep throwing that number out there. Like, that right there is the measuring stick. That is the standard. But they got two more six to tag him, which they will. July 16th is the time period, or at least that is the deadline, the drop dead date they have to sign him to a long term deal, or it kicks into franchise. All right, I don't believe this story, and I don't think anybody else should, but it's been reported, so I'm just going to throw it out there. Shireen Williams, who does really good work for the 4-Star Telegram. Now she works for Pro Football Talk, Mike Florio. This story was out there. I don't believe it, but I'm just going to mention it because it's Cowboys related. I think it might just be a bunch of BS in the offseason. She said recently, when asked if the Cowboys might be interested in Kirk Cousins, quote, "I wouldn't put that past him at all." She says, "We've seen it many times with his intrigue with quarterbacks. We saw it back with Johnny Manziel. He just gets in his head some of these quarterbacks that he falls in love with. I wouldn't be surprised if he has a little love there for Kirk Cousins and is thinking about those down-the-field throws. He does throw the ball down the field way better than most quarterbacks in the NFL. Roethlisberger's right there with him. I just know how much Jerry loves that part of the game. I could see that." That's what she says. And I think she was just throwing this out there. I really don't think she – I think it's like a random conspiracy theory. There's no way in hell that Jerry Jones goes after Kirk Cousins. Not even with the Dak thing, because Dak is cheap. He actually can't afford it because Dak is really cheap. Dak's only going to amount to like 2% of your salary cap. But the money you'd have to spend on Kirk Cousins would mitigate the advantage you gain by having a cheap quarterback in Dak. You know what I mean? So it wouldn't make any sense. It's not going to happen. They're being Dak friendly right now, so I wouldn't worry about that if I was Cowboys fans. I did hear people bring it up and were talking about it. But there are some teams that aren't normally interested in a guy like Kirk Cousins that will be. Expect the Giants to throw their hat in the ring. Expect the Saints to throw their hat in the ring. Expect the Jets to throw their hat in the ring, too. Both New York teams are going to be trying to get Kirk Cousins. That'll be interesting.
You really think the Saints?
Yeah, I think the Saints are going to think about it, too. Yeah, why not? You're the Saints. I mean, you need a quarterback. You know what I mean? Think about how many quarterbacks, franchise quarterbacks under the age of 30 who are healthy ever even hit the market. Never
happens.
Yeah,
I mean, it's rare, but I know Drew Brees doesn't want to go anywhere, and you're going to put Kirk Cousins behind him for a couple of years?
Trade Drew Brees. Who knows?
Crazy, man.
Crazy, man. Agreed. Crazy, man. All right, we'll come back. We'll talk more crazy topics. All of that more right here on the broadcast. This is the Horde Water for 9 a.m. 1260.
Collection pairs by store.
Okay, welcome back to the broadcast. All right, I counted 20 times really since in the modern era, if you will, of major American sports, where a major pro sports city, which means you got to have the big three, all right, the big three sports there, Major League Baseball, the NBA, and the NFL, I've counted 20 times where there have been back-to-back MVPs in two of the three major sports in one pro sports city within a calendar year or in back-to-back years. Remember Houston, it happened with Earl Campbell and Moses Malone in like 78, 79. I also think it happened for Houston with Jeff Bagwell and Hakeem the Dream in 1994. So the double thing has happened in Houston before. Like, that's not crazy. That's happened before. I don't think there's ever been. I couldn't ever track one trifecta. It's a hard thing to track. But, you know, I don't have, you know, that much of a life. So I actually tried to track it one day, and all I counted was 20 times where there have been back-to-back MVPs in multiple major pro sports in that one city, but never the trifecta. And if the Houston Texans can get it together, listen, Deshaun Watson, the way he performed, he was setting rookie records when he was there. He was actually on pace for like 43 touchdowns. He was performing at an MVP level when he was available in those 6 to 7 games. I'm not saying he's going to pick up there, but he's got an outside shot that could make history. Speaking of the Texans, there's no division in the NFL that's going through more changes this offseason than the AFC South. That could be good or bad for the Texans. We don't know. Because the Jags, all right, they could potentially end up drafting or getting a quarterback. There are a lot of mock drafts now that have Lamar Jackson falling out of the first round, Mason Rudolph falling out of the first round. If you're the Jags, man, to me, you'd be crazy not to draft a quarterback in this draft if one of those guys is falling to you late. And they're picking up a fifth-year option on Blake Bortles, they'd be crazy not to draft a quarterback or pick up a quarterback in free agency. So even though they're a playoff team, they may be adding, you know, they may be adding another, you know, face a face of the franchise or another quarterback in some way, form, or fashion, draft or free agency. The Colts have a new head coach. Andrew Luck is now rehabbing. Apparently he's throwing again. Not throwing, but throwing, you know, changing up his throwing motion. He's throwing things. He's not throwing a football yet. And you still don't know if he's going to come back 100%, but they invested money in him. He's a top five paid quarterback in the league, so they're going to double down. They're going to go all in on him. And, you know, like I said, Deshaun Watson, of course, he's coming off an injury, and he was on pace for 43 touchdowns. I think he had 18 touchdowns in a five-game span. So he was on pace to, you know, at least be in a discussion for, like I said, an MVP. And he's going to come back for the Texans. Texans have a new GM, by the way, too. Don't forget that. Colts got a new GM last year. And the Tennessee Titans, new head coach with Mike Vrabel. And they got a new OC and, of course, a new DC Dunn piece. Matt LaFleur from the Rams is their OC. And I like him. I think he's going to be really good. I like that Rams offense. It's coming from that Shanahan coaching tree. But, man, no other – the entire look and landscape of that conference has changed dramatically. And like I said, that could be good for the Texans. We don't know. It could be bad for the Texans. And like I said, the Colts are close. If you're the Colts should draft the quarterback too. I don't know. The Colts should – I don't know what they're thinking. The Colts need to draft the quarterback. That sounds crazy when you have a top five – paid quarterback on your team with Andrew Luck. They don't know what's going to happen with Andrew Luck. They're drafting third, I believe. He needs to draft the quarterback. Nobody's saying it. I haven't heard people talk about it, but if I'm the Colts, I'm drafting a QB. It makes perfect sense to me. So that's another way the division could change, but they need to draft the quarterback. They need an insurance policy behind Andrew Luck. I know they got Jacoby Brissett they brought in there. I think we all know Jacoby Brissett is not going to be a franchise quarterback, even though he kept them close in a lot of games last year. He actually really did. He kept them close. They had more, I think, fourth quarter collapses than any other team, I think, in the last, like, 30 years in the NFL. I mean, they were leading going into a lot of, I think, like, 9 games they were leading going into the fourth quarter and found a way to collapse and lose the lead in most of those. All right. So it's going to be really, really interesting to see how much that division changes even after free agency and even after the draft, once you bring in all of the quarterbacks, potentially different quarterbacks, and even for the Texans, just having Deshaun Watson back changes the whole dynamic of that team, as we saw last year. They were a different team with Deshaun in there, different team when he left as well. Okay, I want to get into the draft a little bit more. We've talked about Lamar Jackson a lot, but Mel Kiper's the latest to jump on kind of the bandwagon criticizing Lamar Jackson. And basically, Mel Kiper has stated that he doesn't really think that Lamar Jackson's a first-round quarterback, which could be true. Maybe he's not a first-round quarterback. Some people have him as a second-round quarterback. As I just mentioned, he's dropped in the draft of a few drafts. But one thing that's interesting, he says that he doesn't like Lamar Jackson because his accuracy, Lamar Jackson's accuracy is an issue for him, that he doesn't think he's a natural passer, which is something also Bill Polian said. But he's got Josh Allen, the quarterback for Wyoming, as his top quarterback, and Josh Allen only completed 57% of his passes. You know what I mean? So something's up. Lamar Jackson has a higher completion percentage than Josh Allen. So either he just doesn't like Lamar Jackson, he doesn't like his skill set. That's kind of what I go back to with the scouting thing. I think some scouts and some people are bringing up race into it. Like, oh, maybe it's just because he's a black quarterback. I don't necessarily think that's it. I think it is discrimination. He's discriminatory, but not toward the player's skin color, but more toward the skill set of the player. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's what it is. Like Bill Polian in his day, you want a pocket passing quarterback. Those are the best quarterbacks. Those are the quarterbacks that he likes. And, yeah, some people will throw the race thing in there. I think they don't trust dual threat quarterbacks yet, and it's a new thing. Like, it's just starting to be something that the NFL is embracing, these hybrid quarterbacks, quarterbacks who are outside of the box. Even Baker Mayfield is one of those quarterbacks. Johnny Manziel was. Hell, Tim Tebow was. You know what I mean? A quarterback that doesn't fit the prototype. And they're just starting to embrace these guys and go, you know what? I can build an offense around this guy. Vince Young just came a little bit too early, or he would have been thrown in that boat too as a guy who's more unconventional outside of the prototype. So for if Lamar Jackson was, I don't know, in the NFL 15 years ago, yeah, no question about it. He's got a, you know, he's definitely going to change positions. Now in today's NFL, I think the NFL will embrace him. They've compared him to Michael Vick, but I think they'll embrace that. So I think that's what Mel Kiper and Bill Polian are. I mean, maybe this Mel Kiper's, you know, past his prime. But I think they, like, there have only been two quarterbacks that have rushed for at least 400 yards at any time in their career and won a Super Bowl. Russell Wilson and Steve Young. Russell Wilson is the shortest quarterback to ever win a Super Bowl. So times are changing. The prototype is changing. The prototype is, that myth of a prototype, I would say, is being destroyed. But it's going to take some time. And this quarterback class shows you a lot of it. Baker Mayfield, he's different. Lamar Jackson, he's very different. So I think it's got a lot of variety in the quarterback class. And I think it shows you the quarterback renaissance that's happening in the NFL, really in football, period. Okay, Albert Breer came out with his quarterback draft and quarterback comparison and he based it on scouts and sources that he had. So he's one scout that I want to talk about. And also I'm talking about Matt Miller, who's a Bleacher Report scout who also does a really, really good job. And Matt Miller first, he actually decided to compare all the quarterbacks coming out to notable NFL quarterbacks. So he compared Sam Darnold to Tony Romo, and I'm a Romosexual. So I like that comparison. That means he can move around and make plays. He compared Josh Allen to Philip Rivers. He compared Josh Rosen to Matt Ryan. Baker Mayfield, he compared to Case Keenum. And we compared Baker Mayfield to players from like Colt McCoy to Drew Brees. Hard to compare him to anybody, but he compared him to Case Keenum. Lamar Jackson, he compared to RG3. I compare Lamar Jackson, even Mike Vick did, to himself, saying he's a Michael Vick clone. And he compared Mason Rudolph from Oklahoma State to A.J. McCarron, which I don't know if that's a very favorable comparison or even a complimentary comparison for Mason Rudolph. So it's really, right now, I think some of these comparisons are making these guys money. Like I said, the Russell Wilson-Baker Mayfield comparison is helping him, but he doesn't want the Johnny Manziel comparison. You know what I mean? And you get a lot of those around scouting time. It's palatable for the masses to have that comparison of some kind. But what you really want to look at in the comparison is, what's the strength of that quarterback? Like, what's, I always say your quarterback has something, like his X-Man ability. What does he do as well, if not better, than the competition? That's his X-Man ability. What makes him stand out? What sets him apart from the group, the masses? And, you know, looking at film, Sam Darnold, he really has his kind of X-Men ability. He's really good in clutch situations. I know he throws a lot of picks, 13 interceptions, and a lot of those were tip passes, too many interceptions in a lot of people's mind. But Deshaun Watson threw a lot of interceptions too. But he was really good in clutch situations because he did have that gunslinger in him, and he was not allow the moment to like subdue him. The moment was never too big for him. And Deshaun Watson was great in the clutch, as we all saw in the national title game against Bama. And Sam Darnold's got some of that. Remember, he had the overtime victory against Texas. He played his best ball against Texas late in the half, late in the game, in overtime. The rest of the game, Texas defense dominated him. The fourth quarter comeback versus Arizona, Stanford game in the Pac-12 title game. He did have that game-ending fumble versus Washington State, but he was really good when the game was on the line, which is a good X-Man ability to have. Lamar Jackson reportedly ran a 4.3. If he runs a 4.3 at the combine, dude, that is gonna, they're going to put him in that Mike Vick category if he's that explosive. But he ran a 4.3 when he was at Louisville. Baker Mayfield, he's the most accurate passer in college football for the last 2 years. He's got Drew Brees-type accuracy. That's Drew Brees' X-Man ability. No quarterback has been more accurate in the NFL than he has been in the last 5 to 8 years. And I like that Baker, he's got a little Romo in him. He's got improvisational skills. He can freestyle out there a little bit too. Mason Rudolph is really good throwing the deep ball. One of the best deep ball throwers in college football for the last 2 years. Josh Rosen's got a great quick release. Doesn't take him long to wind up in his throwing motion. It's almost a natural, organic throwing motion that you don't even have to touch. It's a golden motion, if you will. Josh Allen has the arm strength. He's a freak. Like, he's 6'5". He's got a gun. He can throw it and hit the goalpost from his knees on the 50-yard line, that kind of thing. I don't know. To me, that doesn't matter as much. I want to go with a guy that can prove he can, he's played the game, but that's what I'd be looking at. When I look at the comparisons, I'm looking at what's that X-Men ability, like Romo's improvisational skills, or, you know, the Aaron Rodgers, who has the golden arm and can make every throw. That's the point of the comparison. Okay, one other thing before we go to break here. Albert Breer and Matt Miller, both of those guys worth following throughout the draft process. They're really, really good. Matt Miller of Bleacher Report, Albert Breer of NFL.com. They have both on their independent boards, their big boards, meaning they're just ranking the best player irregardless of position. They have Saquon Barkley, the running back, and a guard from Notre Dame, Quentin Nelson, as their top two players in the draft, period, at any position. And I was like, man, that's really interesting. And I'm talking about all the quarterbacks and out of all the, you know, they got great pass rushers and linebackers in the draft, top two players overall. But they're not going to be drafted that high. And I would never draft a running back in the first round. I think it's insane when you kind of look at where you can get value late in the draft from the running back position. I mean, look at Alvin Kamara, Kareem Hunt this past year. And I know Leonard Fournette and Christian McCaffrey are great, but I don't know if they're that much better than the guys in the third round like Kamara and Hunt. So I don't know if it's worth it to draft the running back that high, but really interesting that those two positions are positions that have been devalued, guard and running back. But this year, the best two players overall in the draft maybe are at those positions. All right, we come back. We'll get into a little crosstalk. We'll talk about the Longhorns basketball team. We'll also talk about the college basketball black market, how it affects the Longhorn men's basketball program, and the big game they got coming up this weekend versus Oklahoma State. All that and more. We'll wrap it up right here on the broadcast. This is The Horn, 104.9 and AM 1260. Just like music. All right, welcome back to the broadcast. Time for a little crosstalk. Yeah, there are like six religious-themed amusement parks across the country. Chad and I were talking about religious amusement parks.
We literally had some crosstalk.
Yes.
We did.
Yeah, they were six.
We won't share it all with you,
no,
but
we
did, yes.
But yeah, there are six Christian amusement parks across the country. There you go. And one of them has like the real live Noah's Ark. I mean, like the Ark.
Wow.
They built the ark.
Built to scale?
Yeah, supposedly. I don't know if you can really build it to scale. I mean, it was two of every creature in the world.
I was going to say, come on, if you got that thing built to scale,
I want
to see it.
Noah was a bad mofo to build that thing.
Because I bet the food court in there is badass. I bet that is awesome, right?
Well, yeah, you got to have a food court, a bar. I mean, in that thing for 40 days and 40 nights. How long was that?
The food court, I'd put like two aardvarks and two zebras. That's what I do. That'd be badass.
It's not a mall. It was an ark.
Oh, I'm sorry. It wasn't a mall.
It probably was at an
amusement park, is what I'm saying.
The amusement park.
It wouldn't just be empty. It's an amusement park.
Yeah, so there's something
to do.
Okay.
Right?
I thought you were talking about the real ark. Like he was like Noah was thinking have a.
No! I'm saying now because you know it would get commercialized, right?
It would have
to get commercialized.
I was saying Noah was not that cool. Maybe he was, but no, you're right. Yeah, they probably definitely would have a food court and like a bar.
There'd be a Cinnabon in there.
Yeah, in Noah's ark.
Exactly,
and he would be dressed, of course,
yes,
like Noah would be.
Right.
All right, what's coming up on the show today, brother? Sorry about that.
All right, let's see. We got a Friday show. We got Greg Swindell coming on at 5:05. Talk a little Texas baseball, and of course, we got to get into the FBI. I guess it's either the beginning of the list or it's list number one, depending on how you want to look at it. And if Longhorn fans haven't heard, I'm sure you've told them plenty. But Texas is on this initial list. We'll talk about all that it means. Rick Barnes has already commented.
Yeah.
The coach at Xavier, I think, is one of the only ones that'll comment. So we'll definitely talk about it.
Yeah, no question about it. All right. Don't go anywhere. That's Chad and Kevin coming up next. I want to thank Ray for everything he's done as well. Thank all you folks for hitting us up on the Specs Text Line. Remember, the revolution will not be televised. We'll be talking about it right here on the broadcast. Everybody enjoy the weekend. Love you guys. Peace. Hope you're ready for the next episode. Hey.